Yes, sir. Here we go. Teeny, get ready. Got letters pouring in already. People writing to us. That's good and good for you. And following us on the John and Sherry Show Instagram page. Sherry spelled S-H-A-R-I. Joe's always putting new stuff up. We're always trying to create new stuff. So there you go.
Oh, that's
so everybody
cute.
Is. You. Wow. Whoa. Whoa. Big burrito. Diving in. All right. Well, President Joe Biden, not quite a little deceptive. Talking about the gun show loophole. I got to close that gun show loophole. Here's the truth. You go to a gun show, which I've been to a gun show, you get a background check. They run a background check on you when you buy a gun at a gun show. That's it. That's facts. But if a private citizen sells a gun to somebody else who's not allowed to have a gun, well, they call that a gun show loophole. That's not a... But it's not at a gun show. You walk into a gun show. The people that are at those gun shows, big, big gun guys, love different guns and stuff. They do a background check. They have to do the background check. But it's only purchases by private sellers where at a gun show or else is not required at a background check. Only purchases from private sellers, whether at a gun show or elsewhere, are not required for background checks in most states. So they want to they think... So many people are buying guns, and it's that loophole. And once we close that loophole, well, then we'll stop all these homicides.
In a move the Justice Department hails as one of the most significant gun regulations in decades, Attorney General Merrick Garland unveiled a new rule to require mostly anyone who sells guns to run a federal background check.
If you sell guns predominantly to earn a profit, you must be licensed and you must conduct background checks. This regulation is a historic step in the Justice Department's fight against gun violence.
Garland says this rule aims to close the so-called gun show loophole that allowed people to sell firearms at gun shows, online, and at other private or informal venues without conducting background checks on buyers.
Too often, these black market guns wind up in the hands of people who are not allowed to have them.
President Biden says he has spent hours with families affected by gun violence who all have a similar message, do something. The ATF says it was able to enhance background checks because of the passage of the 2022 Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. There may be challenges to this new rule in court, but the Biden administration tells ABC News they are confident it will hold up.
During the 90-day open comment period, the administration says it received nearly 388,000 comments, which overwhelmingly favored this new rule. It's expected to go into effect in about 30 days.
Yeah, because everybody knows criminals, when you come up with new laws, criminals are like, oh, darn it, I was going to buy a gun illegal. I was going to buy one, but I guess I can't now because they're going to do background checks. Under federal law, anyone who's purchasing a gun from a federal firearms license, an FFL dealer, must go through a national instant criminal background check. These licensed dealers include anyone trying to make money by selling guns or anyone who sells guns regularly. They must be an FFL dealer. And regardless of where they sell guns, online, a store, or a gun show, they have to put the buyers through the NICS. So,
how is this enforceable?
What, from one private to another? And then the other thing is the ghost gun buyers. This is yes, there are people who are not allowed to get a gun. They've got a felony and a bunch of other stuff hanging over there. So they send their sister in to get the gun. That's, you know, the ghost buyer. They never prosecute on those things. Hardly ever do they ever catch the person. They don't spend the time on it. They don't report on it. They don't spend the money on it. They don't catch them on that stuff. And a lot of the guns are coming across the border, coming into the country. People steal guns from other people. Most of the guns that are used in crime are stolen. Nobody is legally going in, buying a gun, and then going out and just wreaking havoc as most of the homicides that are occurring in the United States. They just don't. That's statistically, the smaller ones of somebody buying a gun legally and then going trying to kill a bunch of people in a church or a mosque or a synagogue or something. It's so rare. Those numbers are so small. The FBI can hardly keep track of those. But just the general mayhem happening on the streets of America, that's some kid who got a gun, which he stole from somebody else. or came into the country somehow, and they got their hands on the gun because somebody wanted to buy the gun, right? It was Barack Obama. It was 2012 or something. It's easier for a kid to go down the street and buy a gun than it is to get a book. It's like, oh, God. And then this gun stuff just keeps going on. Here's a Chinese immigrant. She's at a town hall. And Mr. David Hoag, who was a student there at Parkland mm-hmm. when one of his fellow students murdered all those people, and now he has made a career of being an activist on this, so he's taking questions from the audience, and this woman
says... Hi, my name is Lily Tang Williams. Welcome to my live free or die state. Actually, I am a Chinese immigrant who survived communism. And under Mao, you know, 40 million people were starving to death after he sold the communism to them. And 20 million people died, murdered during his Cultural Revolution. So my question to you, David, is that can you guarantee me, a gun owner tonight, our government in the U.S., in D.C., will never, never become a tyrannical government? Can you guarantee that to me?
There's no way I can ever guarantee that any government will not be tyrannical.
Well, then the debate on gun control is over because I will never give up my guns. Never, never. And you should go to China to see how gun control works for dictatorship of CCP.
So what people will say is, really, you Chinese immigrant, this woman there, that you've got your guns, and if the U.S. government does want to come get them from you or turns tyrannical, somehow you're going to be able to defend yourself from a tyrannical government. I guess she figures, well, I'd rather have a gun than not have a gun. A new movie has come out called Civil War. It's an action movie, Sherry. It's 1 hour and 49 minutes. It's a dystopian future of America. A team of military-embedded journalists race against time to reach Washington, D.C. before rebel factions descend. And it was the whole idea that the United States has been torn apart and it's a civil war that's happening. But even the president of the United States says, you know, we got F-16s. You know, what, you think you got a gun that's going to be able to fight us? People are like, shouldn't have said that out loud.
Good point.
I asked a military guy about that one time, some major general guy, and he said most of the people that would be forced that are in the military to turn their guns on American citizens would probably be the same type of American citizens that would be fighting back against that government, that they wouldn't take those orders to shoot. And the guys that are flying the jets wouldn't be dropping bombs on American homes. It's like, that's a scary thought to think we would ever reach that place. But the ongoing push, what's the Biden administration doing about the death count, the homicides that are happening across the United States? Well, I know we'll just come up with another gun law. And then when it gets beaten down in the House, they could say, well, there's another example of how Republicans are blocking common sense gun laws to protect all American citizens. Put it in place, bat it around for a while, and then anybody that votes against it, you can say, oh, I guess you're okay with everybody dying because you voted against this. You're in the pocket of the NRA.
Well, this is easy for them because it's window dressing. It's really not going to do anything. They don't really have to make an effort to enforce it. So it keeps people happy and quiet for a little while. They go, oh, well, look at what we did, you know, on the campaign trail. And I passed the most effective gun law, blah, blah, blah.
It's just
thing on the resume. And even though it's not going to be effective and it's not going to be enforced, they can say it is, and they can use it as a feather in their cap.
Yeah. And the last thing is in Washington, closer to home. So Attorney General Bob Ferguson fighting hard to stop what a judge had said regarding the idea of having a, large capacity magazines for 1 hour. People went in there and bought them like they were crazy, going out of their minds to get them. And then they shut that down after about an hour. They did that in California for 1 week, and 1.9 million high capacity magazines were sold. So it looks like they're right now in Washington, they'll hold it in place for a while. And then I assume it's going to get appealed, and there'll probably be three judge, and then they'll probably bring another panel in, the same thing they did in California. But the Supreme Court has ruled, both in Heller and what was the second big one that knocked? Oh, Bruin said, look, you have a right to defend yourself. And the, as far as the judge in Washington said, you know, you can't just simply say, well, police can use it because they need it. They need high capacity, but the citizen doesn't. You can't make those distinctions between those two things. So it's always the topic that people bring up, especially, you know, around election time, and the idea that if you control more guns, you're going to be able to control the crime. And as I always say, you had access to guns. It was much easier to get a gun in the 60s, early 60s, and the 50s. So it wasn't access. There's something wrong with the American culture where people argue about guacamole and then pull out a gun and shoot somebody. That is a cultural problem. That's not a gun problem. Bernie Sanders has a cultural problem. He doesn't like the fact that we're working way too hard. So this thing might actually get some legs. Bernie Sanders, an independent, socialist, he's proposing a four-day work week. And he is for real, that according to the National Review. Here's what he wants. You work 4 days, you get paid for five, right? So your salary doesn't go down at all, but you just don't have to work as much. And then they're using this study that had come out of the UK saying this, by the way, people love a 4 day work week. It's so good for the morale. It's good for revenue. People produce more. They are happier. They've got a better work-life balance. And look at this study that's come up from the UK to show you that four-day work week would be a great idea.
Right. But what they're finding now is that study was deeply flawed. The companies that participated in that study weren't randomly chosen. They were probably... they were asked if they want to do it. They were probably a little coerced into doing it. And it's just dumb, because if you give somebody the option for a couple of weeks or whatever it was, 6 months, okay, you're only going to work 4 days. Of course they're going to be happy. This is going to be the next work from home disaster, where they think it's great and they talk about how wonderful it is because people are just sort of relieved and relaxed and all of this. And it's going to backfire. Because what company wants to pay a 40-hour week and have somebody work only 32 hours? What's the upside?
Right.
And they say, oh, well, they spend more time with their families. Okay.
And plus, if it's such a great idea, then why force companies to do it? Companies should go, wow, hold on, you mean people are happier, they don't have to work on Friday, and our revenue doesn't go down, our revenue actually goes up, it's more profitable? Well, hell, let's do it. We don't need a law. We don't need anybody to tell us do it. We'll do it, because look at that. Everybody's happy, making more money. Let's go to a 3 day work week.
Yeah,
man, if you're happy working 4 days, you're in love over coming up with that.
Yeah,
it just doesn't make any sense. Yeah,
no,
the people that they spoke to, the companies that said they were already thinking of doing it, 11% of them, I think, were nonprofits, so revenue wasn't that big of a deal. And when they talk to the other people, they're like, yeah, we're not going to do it. So they cherry pick the people that they used in the study. So that's the thing that they're holding up. Sure, people would love to work 5 days, 4 days a week and get paid for five. But where's the money coming from? Where are you going to get the money? On Friday, no one's there. The phone is ringing. Nobody's picking it up. No one's calling customer service. No one's shipping anything. Oh, I see. Okay. So on the fifth day, there's zero revenue because no one's working. No one's flipping burgers, making fries, driving the bus, whatever else. But somehow magically, they're still making the same amount of money because there's the revenue going out in the form of wages, but there's no money coming in. Nutty concept, but Bernie's all in on this. And people are like, this is smart, because this is what the American people need, more work-life balance.
Mm-hmm. 92% of the 61 companies that they recruited to do this study say that change, the 4 day work week, will now be permanent. So it's just, you know, they were thinking about it before. You know that they figured they didn't have a lot to lose. They had to do the math on it before they agreed to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Learn some economics.
I just don't.
Exactly. Thank you, Andrew.
Yeah,
man.
I just don't think that this is going to be something that sticks. I think it's going to be one of those things where they realize, just like work from home, there's no collaboration. There's no there's the whole idea of working as a team goes away.
But Sherry, if the government can step in and tell the employer that he has to pay $20 an hour for somebody to make hamburgers, as they're doing in California, and now there's mass layoffs, and there's also, where's the show that I found that thing? The guy walks up to the kiosk to buy something. Was that a fast food restaurant? And the woman is in the Philippines.
Oh yeah, we're talking about her next. Yeah, it's in New York.
In New York. Yeah, the guy's ordering something and he's talking to a person sitting there at a camera and he's on a laptop and the woman's taking his order. Yeah, I think she's in India.
She's in the Philippines.
The Philippines.
Probably making pennies on the dollar.
Well, yeah, she's making what would be equivalent to Filipino dollars. You know, in India, when they offshore the jobs here, and if you're making $35,000 in India, it's equivalent to like $150,000 in the United States. So they just ship over there. There you go. Pay India value dollar, and then if you bring it back here, you know, you're paying almost like four times as much or something. So anyway, Bernie Sanders wanting you to work one day less and still get paid for your day off. Tini, you okay with that? Yeah, she hardly works at all.
Yeah.
The answer is yes.
I'm going to have her,
come
live with you this weekend. She's coming because she's going to come live with you this weekend. Sherry, I see your Cairo 7 TV, and I raise you one Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Ooh. They've got 16 locations. They've been around for 53 or 54 years. Who's counting? Take the car to Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Take the car over there, especially if the car starts to sound all kind of weird and like it's having some problems. Just take it to Bucky's. I'm trying to find the weird sound of Bucky's Auto Service Centers. No, I can't find it. Ah. It's just better than a computer. Is that Sue Bell? Or is that the car?
I think that's a car.
Okay. A New York restaurant replaces local cashier with a woman on a Zoom call from the Philippines. There's any sound of this, but this guy says he goes into this restaurant, goes to order, and there's this lady sitting there, and she's got they got like this screen, like the, you know, chroma key screen sitting. She looks pretty depressed, just sitting there, and the guy goes to talk to her, the Zoom call on the thing, and then she places the order, and she's got some, you know, graphics behind her about, like, you know, oh, happy to see you and nice to see you and stuff. Guy's like talking to her, puts the order in, and then at some point she leaves the Zoom call. We'll be back shortly, because she doesn't sit there the whole time, then comes back in. Guy's like, here I am having a conversation with a woman in the Philippines. Which you get that when you call customer service, you call some business, and the guy, you're like, I'm having a problem with the internet. Okay, what, my name is Bob. You're like, really? Bob? Really? You don't sound like a Bob. My name is Bob. And you're like, where are you? I'm Cincinnati. You're like, oh, really? Right. Oh, you're in Cincinnati. Uh-huh. Yeah. How are the Bengals doing? I want to know how your Wi-Fi. I'm like, no, Bob. I don't believe you're in Cincinnati. I don't care where you are, but just don't tell me your name is Bob and you're in Cincinnati. How can I help you? I'm like, we can start this relationship over again, Bob, by you being honest with me, because I know you're not in Cincinnati. Because if you were in Cincinnati, you'd sound far more depressed about being in Cincinnati.
That's for sure. Yeah. I
don't need to break you down. I don't want to have to calls any. I just want you to just let me know who you are. Just don't tell me you're in the United States. I know you're not.
And they did a little, I guess, survey or something about how people feel about this restaurant in New York and this woman being so remote. What is the big problem with this? So what?
That's what I say.
I mean, really, why is that any different than ordering, you know, DoorDash or something like that? You don't have human interaction at that point. So what? She's sitting in the Philippines. If everything is getting done and it's more efficient, what does it matter? I guess the only thing I don't really know is how do they pay? Because if she can't physically collect the money, who's overseeing that?
I assume it's credit card, or maybe it's like an ATM or something where you put the cash in on the thing, but might just be for credit card purchases that you're swiping the thing right there. It's an international market, right? And that's it's for the people that have been displaced. It's sad. I mean, it's really tragic. If you look what happened in the 70s, 80s, and the 90s when they just hollowed out the jobs that were available. You know, my grandfather worked there in the factory, and then my father, and then I worked there. The kid goes to high school, figures to get a job working in the steel mill or manufacturing, and it just goes away. Like Milwaukee, Wisconsin, just tragic. Just the businesses just take the jobs elsewhere where they can have somebody do the work and not have to pay the salaries that are being paid in the United States. And it is sad, but there's, you know, it's unfortunate for the people that depended on that type of industry to be there. And there's no, you know, easy transition for them. There's a great book called They Can't Outsource My Hammer, which basically walks you through the very logical presentation that if you are a carpenter or a plumber, you're not going to have somebody in Vietnam or India or the Philippines fix your toilet from where they are. And that's why a story we didn't do about a week ago, right, Joe, that the number of people, kids that are in high school that are starting to realize, geez, you know what I should do? Maybe I get a job where I'm working with my hands. It would pay off much faster than going to college. More and more high school seniors see college as not the best choice anymore. A number of colleges are closing. That's good. And people are not getting caught up with, you know, paying 30, 40, 50, 60, 70,000 or more with a college degree that is basically useless. You can't do anything about it. So why not learn to turn a screw or learn to be able to fix something or hang a frame or do some just some running out of carpenter expressions, 24 inch off
you can measure center. Something
just get the 24 off center
well or
get you frame it just frame it just kick it in there
or just frame it.
Just frame it. Get away from it. Yes.
Or you could frame it. That's the other option.
I would hang this the other day. Stud finder. Beep 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 beep. And I can't find it. So I'm just I'm putting these nails into the wall. Like, where's the stud? So then you do the. He's trying to find the. Okay, I think. Oh, okay, there's right there. So I go to put the nail in. Boop, right into the drywall. It's like, darn it. Pull it out, and then, there's a stud. Bang, 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 right into the drywall. And Nick comes in, she goes, what are you doing? There's like 11 holes in the wall. I said, I can't find the stud. Where's the stud on this thing? So then this guy, Eric, nice guy, comes in. Nick hands him a list. Oh, by the way, here's a list of all the stuff my husband can't do, but you'll be able to do in 5 minutes. So I sit there. I don't know why I'm not in just great big petticoats from the 1890s, you know, eating a big lollipop with my hair in curlers or hair up in big pigtails. Hi, Eric. You got to fix all the stuff that I don't know how to do.
Well, you know what's going to help.
So emasculating.
When you grow that beard, that full beard,
oh,
there's no stopping you. You're going to know how to find every stud in the wall.
You know where the stud will be. Right there in front of you. Elon Musk and Jamie Dimon predicted 80% of jobs will be replaced with AI. I saw this in the Wall Street Journal, and the one guy they were interviewing, it, without any pause at all, as he was explaining, not Elon Musk, instead, some other guy's like, I forget what it was, Joe. Simply, like,
I've got it right here for you. He said,
you do?
Yeah, here he is. The time. Here he is.
80%. Of 80% of all jobs that we know of today.
80% of 80% of all jobs.
80% of 80%.
Not including journalists. That would not be...
Well, journalists are already happening. You're reporting a lot of sports events the minute the story, the game ends. Yeah, that's not a journalist.
Distinctive journalism is not done by AI. What venture capitalists? Will venture capitalists be replaced?
Look, I can't say it won't. I can't say it won't. It's very hard to predict, but the following is a good way to look at it. Anywhere we rely on human expertise, AI will have that expertise better, and it'll have broader information. So take an oncologist treating a patient for breast cancer. Very unlikely they remember the last 5,000 papers on type HER-positive breast cancer. or triple negative or take your favorite, right? Very unlikely. The oncologist remembers it. But the AI will know that, and it won't have a bias that this particular drug worked in a patient recently. It's a recency bias, which is a human failing. The AI will prescribe the right treatment for the patient. They'll be a much better oncologist than the oncologist.
So then it gets into the whole discussion. Well, what do you do if 80% and that it, other people have countered this guy's prediction? But what do you do? What do you do if people, there's no jobs for anybody to do? What do we do all day?
Well, I think people are blowing this out of proportion to some degree. Like Elon Musk said that within a year, AI, they will have AI that is smarter than any one human. I think that's a little far-fetched. And there will always be the need for the human touch, whatever that is. There may be an oncologist, an AI oncologist, that can sift through data a little bit more effectively and a little easier because they don't get tired than an oncologist. But you're always going to need someone to do those things or to be a part
of
that.
There's gathering the information that has already been available. AI grabs it. But innovation in the sense of creating, will it have the ability to think and create, not just connect, find patterns and combinations and draw on files that are already available to it, but to conceive of something that has never been thought of before? Will it be able to do that and think? And then the other greatest challenge, can it relate to us as we relate to each other in a human aspect?
If it can, okay.
And if it can, you think it'll top us from Talk.com, the Heavy 100?
talkers?
I don't think so. Yeah. Hey, those airport lounges, hooyah, spend the money. If you fly a lot, it's worth it. It's like if you're going to a normal airport and you go to a Chili's or something else, or you get a beer for $18. It's like, what's the price? Is it more outrageous than a ballpark or at an airport? If they got you. So I fly so much. I think I'm going to get it. So I got the Alaska Airlines lounge thing. I take the kids in there. I'm like, guys, okay, before we go in, let's get a plan. Hurt them on the shrimp. Hurt them on the hard-boiled eggs. Hurt them on the pancake machine. Don't be wasting your time with some of that, cheap stuff. Don't let them get you caught up in the granola or the oatmeal. Get over to the eggs. Get the bacon. Hurt them hard on the bacon. I want a lot of the meat byproducts. Get in there. Let's get in it. Ready? Break. You're running in there like, whoa, where's the bacon, Dad? So got to hurt them on that. Get your money's worth, Sherry, because she's paid like 400 and some bucks a year to get the Alaska Airlines lounge one. So, Get to the expensive stuff. Get your money's worth.
Yeah, but these,
like, Dad, it's 6 in the morning. Why are you drinking all those beers? I'm hurting them on the alcohol right right now.
But these amenities that you're talking about don't even walk up to the ones that they're now being offered. I mean, there's stuff like there is at LaGuardia Airport. They have a caviar station. They have a caviar place where you can get caviar. At Hartford, Jackson, Atlantic, they have complimentary massages. In Denver, they have nap pods. And the ambience is kind of like a luxury hotel. So they're really, really pumping up all of the really, really good things that people would want to do. As they say, there's three types of lounges. There's airline operated, shared use spaces, and that's like frequent flyer stuff or whatever, or credit line lounges. So you get an American Express and Capital One and all of that.
Centurion Lounge, Sherry, right there.
Oh, okay.
Okay. If they don't like that one, then I'll be on that one. That one.
That looked like the same one. That's the same one. You just chose the same card. Let me see them all together like a deck of cards.
Hang on.
All right.
Be of little faith. Ah. Ha.
I saw two American Express cards.
Yeah.
That's only one lounge.
Well, you threw them, so once. There we go. Okay, there's one. There's two. Don't you have an American Express Black?
What's wrong with you two?
Maybe don't. Right. Don't show.
No, I don't. You know what? I don't have that. I'm not showing the numbers. See?
Okay.
Thank you,
okay.
Andrew. Voice of Reason. I got to get the black one. My son's like, yeah, Dad, that's nothing compared to. Got to get the American Express Black. And you hold that one out. You're like, excuse me, do you take this? Rich guy.